Thank you, Don. Yeah, while you were talking, I thought, oh, I don't have a song, and then one popped into my mind. So I don't know how appropriate it is, but this is actually in honor of the quote that we just talked about from Jay Krishnamurti and Kathy Smith and Regina Don Akers. So and now I've built it up so big, it better be perfect, right? So here it is. I'll share my screen. Oh, shoot.
It don't matter to me if you really feel that you need some time to be free. Time to go out searching for yourself, hoping to find time to go to find. It don't matter to me if you take up with someone who's better than me, 'cause your happiness is all I want. Don't matter to me if your searching brings you back together with me, 'cause there'll always be an empty room waiting for you.
Okay, that was fun, if nothing else, right? That's sweet. In the spirit of equanimity and Jay Krishnamurti, it don't matter to me. we've been reading from The Way of Effortless Mindfulness with Locke Kelly. And so we're going to do that again today. I'm thinking of Dawn saying, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's what Jacqueline's going to talk about, you know. and I just wonder if there's really anything to say. I thought, so let me say for a moment, let me give you my commentary on Regina's teaching. Absolutely, it was fabulous. And anybody who heard it knows that Regina's teaching on the Tao, what chapter was that, Dawn? Don't know. that was a fabulous teaching. I like that both the Tao and the Bible both contain that. That's what I should have played. That bird song, right? Everything has a season, turn, 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 a time to sow, a time to reap, a time to, because that's the same verse that's found in both the Tao and in the Bible. So, but at any rate, Yeah, and I was talking about the suffering of others, and that's the hardest place. You know, you see the stories on the news. A little girl just, and she's not the first one, just died of that brain, that amoeba eating brain thing after getting in fresh water. It's a thing that's happening. If water goes up your nose in fresh water in certain places, there's this amoeba that will kill you within a week or so. And it's just like, oh, you know, that poor family, and, you know, and they just went to the lake for the weekend, and, you know, and you know, and that's on a small scale, affecting a few number, a small number of people. But that's where I find it hardest to be equanimous, or however you say the word, right? That's where it seems hardest to apply. So I really appreciate Regina's response to that to me, which was really, it's the recognition that to do anything other than love what is to push that pendulum and continue, you know, that suffering, right? So, and actually, if you don't recognize the pendulum and perpetuating the suffering, so that's the recognition that has to happen. And I've certainly done that in my own life. I know that I have looked at, the suffering and been grateful for it. Kind of, oh my God, just the freedom, recognize my own freedom to suffer or not suffer, or, and, you know, look back on memories look back on memories and that, you know, of really trying times and just being so grateful for that, right? For the fullness of life, right? Just for like everything being and the freedom to let everything be. So I've really experienced that in regard to myself. And now it's, just sitting with that recognition in regard to all of life. And Kathy says, my ego says that seems so callous, just let suffering be. Yeah, well, and I appreciate that, and that's where I was coming from, Kathy, certainly when I asked the question of Regina when she was teaching. So but I think that really is the answer, is to see that anything else just perpetuates the suffering, you know, just like everything else. Egos, the thinking mind, the confused mind position on this is 180 degrees backwards. And that it's just one of the things that's more deeply embedded with us, I think. You know, there's suffering, something has to be done, which is ego's mantra, regardless of whether you're talking about in your personal life or in the, you know, regard to the world. Something must be done. And the answer, the true answer is, no, the answer is to do nothing. The answer is to be still. And, it's just hard to make that transition. But I really appreciate the teaching. I really believe that it's the truth. It's just hard to flip that particular thought in regard to the suffering that we see in the world. Okay, so now I'm going to go to Locke Kelly. Yeah, and Kathy says she thinks it's the truth too. Yeah, amen. Okay, Locke Kelly, saved by the Kelly. No, I don't think there's anything else for me to say. Anything else? If I said another word, it would take away from Regina's teaching. Well, as if you could, but you get the idea. And I'll just move on to this. Locke Kelly, The Way of Effortless Mindfulness. If you're reading along, I'm on page 24 of his book. And I note at the top of that page, it's the last exercise we did last week, and the glimpse is called How to Do Not Doing, which I love, right? Because that's what we're talking about. Isn't that perfect? Yes. So let's just do that one again. It's just, you might remember, it's just one line. But let's all close our eyes. Deep breath. how to do not doing. Can you let go into the awake awareness that is resting deeper than sleep, yet wide awake? That is our starting point. If you want to open your eyes again. Yeah. It does feel softer, doesn't it? Yeah. Okay. on our way to effortless mindfulness. As in any learning process, there are obstacles, traps, or points of difficulty that everyone encounters. One of them is our doubt, thinking something like, other people are getting it, but I'm not. However, the interesting thing about effortless mindfulness is that your doubting part, your sincere effort-making part, and your thinking mind will never get it. If you think, I will never get this, in some ways, you're correct, because the I that is trying to get it can't. Yeah, there's real trust in that. And frankly, I think this relates to what we were just talking about. You know, it's just really hard for that thinking mind, that confused mind. It's like, that doesn't make sense. I'm to do nothing. In regard to the suffering of the world, et cetera, right? But trusting that the truth is true. It's beyond the limits of the thinking mind. It's beyond the man-made laws. And I don't mean the statutory laws. I mean, you know, the way people are supposed to behave, right? If you think I'll never get this, in some ways you're correct, because the I that is trying to get it, to understand it, to make it make sense, can't. Locke says, if you had never ridden a bicycle, I could describe how to ride. Put your left leg on the left pedal, then swing your right leg over the bike, push off, and begin to move before you put your foot on the right pedal, and then pedal as you try to balance and keep your head, your hands steady on the handle grips. I could read that slower, but I don't think it would help. He says, it can make some sense, but it's only when you get on the bicycle, start riding, and get a feel for it yourself that you will know balance and effortless riding. Okay? It's not till you do it that you get it. It's only when you get on the bicycle, start riding, and get a feel for it yourself, which is what we're doing with the glimpses. You get a feel for yourself that you will know balance and effortless riding. Ultimately, you don't need to intellectually understand how to do effortless mindfulness any more than you need to understand the physics behind how your body balances when you ride a bicycle. You need only to shift into awake awareness as the place of knowing. You need only to shift into awake awareness as the place of knowing. From there, the knowing will teach itself. And that nearly brings tears to my eyes. It's the same line from... that's powerful. It's the same line from A Course in Miracles that says the truth will, you know, get still, be still, and the truth will teach you of itself. It's the same line. It's the same promise. You need only to shift into awake awareness as the place of knowing. From there, the knowing will teach itself. He says, It's so funny how this stuff is right on point, even though it's like seems like a discreet, you know, we're taking just a little bite of something off here on the side. But it's all really, really on point. As we'll see with the name of the next glimpse, he says, try the following mindful glimpse to experience these teachings more fully. And the name, Relax the Problem Solver. Relax the Problem Solver. Again, the thinking mind's mantra, ego mind, confused mind, whatever you want to call it, the mantra is something must be done. Right? And that's the opposite of that, of the knowingness of what we are, awareness, life, presence, loving what is, allowing everything to be as it is. Yeah. So we're going to do this glimpse, but what I want to do first is I want to pull up the music that I will play very low, but I want to get it up here. Here you go. And Don is going to let me know. I can remember the name up for a minute. Don will let me know when I start playing it, whether I can still be heard, so. I know, I haven't started sharing the screen yet. It's very complicated. I keep forgetting to pull that up before the whole thing starts. Okay, Don, how's that? Can you hear me? Does the music need to be lower or higher? My chat's not working.
The music could be a little higher.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll try that. Good? Tell me. Yeah. Good? Is that it?
Yes.
Good. I wasn't sure if that was up or good. Thank you, Don. I appreciate your technical assistance, always. All right, so here we go. We're going to look at this new glimpse called Relax the Problem Solver. Okay. I've got a couple of paragraphs here that he starts with, this glimpse with, before we're asked to do anything. He says, to begin this glimpse, start from wherever you are. Notice the sense of me that is here now. Notice the feeling of having a sense of self as a doer or problem solver. The small sense of self keeps its centrality by being a problem solver. The small sense of self keeps its centrality by being a problem solver. It can be helpful in solving everyday problems, but it is mainly trying to solve the problem of identity, which it can't do. This manager part is usually felt within your body, looking out of your eyes. Notice the location, shape, size, and feeling of this me that is trying to be helpful and undertake this mindful glimpse. It usually has thoughts and worries like, am I doing it right? Or I don't think I'll get it. How do I do this? The goal is not to escape everyday problems, situations, or issues that need to be dealt with. Instead, experience what it's like to step out of the problem solver identity. Relax this manager and notice what's here. When awareness looks directly, notice what changes, what is absent, and what new qualities arise. What is the new feeling of what or who is here? Okay, so here's where we're asked to participate. With open or closed eyes, your choice. With open or closed eyes, ask yourself, what is here now when there is no problem to solve? Let your awareness unhook from the problem solver. Drop, open, feel within and all around. Who is here? What is aware? What is here when there is nowhere to go and nothing to do? Nothing to know or create or become? What is here just now? You are not the problem solver. What is here when you are not orienting by thought? You are not going down to sleep, and you are not going back to daydream. Just be. What is this? Now, ask yourself, what's aware now when there is no problem to solve? Feel the qualities that arrive. What's absent that was here a few minutes ago? What natural qualities are here now? Where are you aware from? What is this feeling of being? Now, from fresh inner's mind, fire. What's here now? There is no problem to solve. Thank you. stop sharing the music. And I will invite anybody that would like to share their experience to do so. I'll share Dawn's for her. She's still in it. would anybody else like to, or Dawn, would you like to actually share your experience?
Oh my God. I was just playing with the question. Like, my mind totally, like, when they stay, what, I can't talk. I don't want to talk. And yeah, I do want to talk because something did happen. So I want to share. There were no thoughts in my mind for, it could have been like 10 or 12 full seconds. And I tell you, the way that felt is it felt like 30 minutes. Yeah. But then when you stopped the music, I was like, no, I never want to leave this. Don't make me. So then there was that inner rebellion. And then I started being softer with myself and what was happening. Like, okay, well, how can I be with this and still with my eyes open, which I have no clue and I don't even know, but I do want to play with this inquiry. The question is how to remain in that, stay in that, speak from that. That's that whole thing that I'm thrilled about with the embodied practices, because I want to be able to function in such a way that whatever just happened to me doesn't leave when I open my eyes, doesn't leave when I engage in the world, doesn't leave when I'm doing my job. So that's my inquiry. And what happened was just this trying to, it was a question was formulating in my mind, like, how might I live from this, even with my eyes open? Like, stay in that. It's like the mind is just blank. And there's just, it's like there's nothing there but utter peace. Well, and when he said, you asked a couple questions in there, you said, or in the exercise was, notice what was there and what isn't there anymore. And I can tell you, worrisome thoughts weren't there. The tension in my face, just this felt like, So that's what happens. What I love about this practice is I notice how quickly I go into it.
Yeah.
But I also notice the pendulum, how quickly I go out of it. I'm thrilled that I see how quickly I go in.
Let me address some of what you said. And thank you for sharing, first of all. I also want to say, you know, this is the same thing we were talking about in Gentle Healing Year One last night when we read from Michael Langford's instructions on awareness watching, or awareness being awareness, right? And this also goes back to what we were talking about a moment ago in trusting in the truth. And the instructions are that with practice, with lots and lots of practice, this just comes naturally. And, you know, it's, frankly, it is just like riding a bike. When you first get up on a bike and ride it, you're going to be all wobbly and you're going to be afraid you're going to wreck and you're going to, you know, and then, you know, I don't know, 3 months, 6 months later, you're riding without any hands, you know. It just becomes a natural way of being. You rediscover your natural way of being is a better way to say that, right? And so that the more we practice it, the more we live from it. And I absolutely trust in that truth. Yeah, so that's what I want to say on about what you said. Yeah, hooray! Yeah. Well, and you know, that TED Talk we watched the other night where she was talking about mindfulness training and people who did more practice just got used to operating from here, had less stress, less trauma, became more compassionate, right? Just just because they had practiced this. So, yeah. So we're hearing it from all over. Okay. This is the end of this chapter. And at the end of this chapter, page 26 of Locke's book, he says, in the next chapter, we will look more closely at what is unique about effortless mindfulness by comparing it with the more well-known form of deliberate mindfulness. And I will say that I have read through this book once quickly before I interviewed Locke. Somewhere in here, it gets a little tedious, I felt like. No offense, Locke, we love you. But, you know, he's talking all about these traditions and the four this and the 12 that. And the we'll just see how this this goes. I'll read and let the book stand on its own merits. But anyway, here we go. Chapter 2. We made all the way to chapter 2 in what, a month? It's good, though. Chapter 2, Discovering Effortless Mindfulness. In general, mindfulness can be defined as a way of being conscious of our internal and external experiences, of being engaged and related to what we are doing. The opposite of mindfulness is mindlessness, being distracted, spaced out, or impulsive. And this actually reminds me of a couple of things. You know, we talk about the thinking mind, the chattering mind, being an intermediary between our experience, between what's actually going on and our experience of it. You know, Michael Singer talks about that. Other folks talk about it as well. But, you know, we're once removed, right? There's a buffer zone, this filter that everything that gets filtered through. So you never really experience your experience. The other thing that this reminds me of is, you know, I've certainly heard Regina talk about it, and we heard Eshwar Zikobin talk about, do something and just do that thing. He talked about washing hands, you know, turn the water on, feel what the water feels like, put the soap on it, rub your hands. You know, all without thinking about what's going on, just experience what's going on. And then when you're done, say, this is washing hands. And, you know, I believe that what Eshwar is getting at is just have the experience. You don't have to label it and define it and compare, you know, oh, the water's too hot. Oh, the water's too cold. It wasn't that cold a while ago when I washed my hands. You know, do I really need to wash my hands? I just want, you know. Right? Just experience that without the intermediary of the self. So anyway, that's what comes to mind when I read the opening of this chapter. He says, the opposite of mindfulness is mindlessness, being distracted, spaced out, or impulsive. It's doing things. That's interesting. just a different way to use this phrase, but it's funny. It's doing things without thinking about them, not being clear about our words or actions. Mindfulness is a basic human capacity and has become part of contemporary Western culture as we have joined millions of people around the world who have been practicing mindfulness for millennia. The other thing that comes to mind is that TED Talk, again, that TED Talk we watched the other day where she was, the woman talked on how to tame your wandering mind. She talked about how that captain was driving down that bridge in Florida, water on both sides, beautiful day, and he's still under the stress of what, you know, the post-traumatic stress of whatever he had experienced in battle, and he's not hearing the birds singing and seeing the blue ocean, and he's just intent on doing himself in at that time. But, yeah. So, anyway. Locke says, mindfulness is one of the most important things we can discover for our health and happiness. And over the past 20 years, empirical research has repeatedly shown that it reduces stress-related symptoms, anxiety, depression, and chronic pain, as well as improving cognitive function, boosting immunity, and lowering blood pressure. Mindfulness is now taught in schools, community centers, hospitals, gyms, prisons, and businesses. Gradually, mindfulness meditation as a basic tool of healthy living is becoming as routine as eating well, exercising, and getting enough sleep. Locke says, when I look back at my life, I realize my mindfulness training began when I was quite young, while playing sports and doing arts projects in elementary school. My first formal meditation instruction was in Transcendental Meditation, TM, when I was 16. During college, I practiced Christian contemplation, attended Quaker meetings, and went on a Zen retreat. When I attended graduate school for a master's degree in psychology and spirituality, I traveled to Sri Lanka, India, and Nepal on a fellowship to study varieties of meditation and healing. It was during that year, over three decades ago, that I was fortunate enough to be introduced to both deliberate and effortless mindfulness. I started by spending 6 months at the University of Peradeniya near Kandy, Sri Lanka, and in monasteries and meditation centers practicing Vipassana, or insight meditation, from the Theravada Buddhist tradition, all forms of meditation that I call deliberate mindfulness. Later, I traveled to India, where I heard the Dalai Lama give a public talk about direct path or essence traditions in Tibetan Buddhism called, I don't know how to say this word, it's D-Z-O-G-C-H-E-N. Anybody know how to say it? Where is Jay when you need him? Susan, do you know how to say it?
It's Dogshin.
Dogshin, thank you. And Mahamudra.
Mahamudra.
Thank you very much, Susan. He taught that the love and freedom we all seek is already equally within all of us, and there are ways to directly realize awake awareness as their source. So again, he heard Dalai Lama teaching on those traditions, and what he heard him teach was that the love and freedom we all seek is already equally within all of us. And there are more ways to directly realize awake awareness as their source. I was so moved by his teaching that I enthusiastically raised my hand and asked who I could study this direct path with. He then suggested a teacher, Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche. Is that how you say that? Probably not. Yes. Oh, good. In Nepal. I changed my plans and traveled by train, bus, and plane to meet with him at his hermitage on the slopes of the Kathmandu Valley. It was through this teaching that I first heard the term effortless mindfulness. In his book, Rainbow Painting, Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche writes that there are two types of mindfulness, deliberate and effortless. He described effortless mindfulness as a simple yet advanced form of mindfulness. He taught that effortless mindfulness is the path to realizing and living from our nature of mind, awake awareness. In Tibetan Buddhism, Rigpa is the word for nature of mind or awake awareness. Its opposite is Marigpa, or not Rigpa, which is the root of suffering. The cause of suffering is failure to recognize awake awareness. The cause of suffering is failure to recognize awake awareness. And the solution to suffering is in realizing and living from awake awareness. And I just want to say, again, I just want to point out how perfectly that fits with the teaching that we heard from Regina earlier, right? The cause of suffering is failure to recognize awake awareness, and the solution to suffering is realizing and living from that. The sole responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself. Same teaching, right? The cause of suffering isn't anything out here. It's failure to recognize the power that you are, the truth of what you are. It's failure to recognize awake awareness. The solution is to realize and live from awake awareness. He says the shift into awake awareness is what makes effortless mindfulness possible. Locke says, when I met with Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche, he was 61 years old and had completed three separate three-year retreats. Can you imagine a three-year? Wow. So this fellow had completed three separate three-year retreats in his lifetime. However, he explained that his uncle and teacher had shown him how to directly access effortless mindfulness when he was 11 years old. And he said that what he had experienced through the practice when he was young and what he experienced through those years-long retreats seemed to be exactly the same. He shared that this was one of the reasons he offered direct practices of effortless mindfulness to those who might be interested and ready to access their natural source of mind immediately. When Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche first gave a small group of us effortless mindfulness instructions, it took only a few minutes. And Don, you were just saying that, saying this. He says, yet I became as calm and clear as after my 10-day deliberate mindfulness meditation retreats in Sri Lanka. But it was also a different type of calm. I felt alert, compassionate, embodied, and energetically connected to everyone and everything. My emotions were more accessible and spacious, and I related to them directly in a loving way. I began to laugh as tears of gratitude flowed down my face. The pervasive feeling of anxiety, self-centeredness, and fear, which had always felt like a normal part of who I was, dissolved. What was here instead was a profound sense of well-being, unity, joy, and gratitude. This full expression lasted through the day and had faded a bit when I awoke the next morning, but it remained in the background. And more importantly, something fundamental had changed in me. And I just, good news, right, Don? Yeah. And I just want to make a comment on this. He talked about that pervasive feeling of anxiety, self-centeredness, and fear, which had always felt like a normal part of who I was. He said that dissolved. And I think that this is so true. I think A Course in Miracles talks about this as well. You know, we go around thinking that this low-level anxiety, this low-level fear is normal. That's what's so exciting when we do finally make the turn that Michael Langford talks about and start to do this awareness, watching awareness. We recognize that there is a space within us where that's not normal. I think that Locke is talking about that same recognition here. Okay, and we're on the middle of page 29, deliberate and effortless mindfulness. Because effortless mindfulness is a less familiar approach for most Westerners, it may be easier to understand it in contrast with the more familiar deliberate mindfulness, which is now so widespread that it is what most people call mindfulness. Most of the mindfulness books, centers, and teachers in the West have come from the Theravada and some Zen traditions. In my own journey from Theravada from the Theravada tradition in Sri Lanka to the Tibetan tradition in Nepal, I could see these were different approaches to meditation. It's important to say that both of these traditions have the same goal of awakening. They're simply different paths up the same mountain. I started with good training in deliberate mindfulness, and I am glad I had this period of deliberate mindfulness practice because I benefited from the wonderful teachers I studied with. Because of this experience with both traditions, I am able to help most people start their meditation practice with either deliberate or effortless mindfulness. I refer those who do not resonate with the effortless mindfulness approach to insight meditation or Zen meditation centers to learn forms of deliberate mindfulness. Just as my friends and colleagues have generously translated and brought deliberate mindfulness to our culture, I would like to offer a contemporary approach to effortless mindfulness to help people relieve suffering. The word effortless isn't simply modifying what is usually understood as mindfulness, like easy listening or instant coffee. We aren't being asked to try to be effortless. Trying to be effortless can be quite an effort. Effortless mindfulness does not mean that this is important, so let me read it. Effortless mindfulness does not mean that there is not an initial effort. We learn how to make an initial effort to shift out of our small mind to find an effortless awareness that is already here. It is also called effortless because mindfulness becomes spontaneously sustaining. Also, good news, speaking of what Don was talking about a while ago. I often listen to Ajashanti's book, The End of Your World, got it on an audio book. And he uses the analogy awakening as he uses the analogy of a rocket. And he says there is effort at the beginning, you know, because like a rocket has to have that initial thrust to break through break through the atmosphere into space. It takes that initial effort to do that. And it sounds like Locke is making the same point here. There is an initial effort to, what does he say? To shift out of our small mind, only to find effortless awareness that is already here. Okay. Locke says, effortless mindfulness involves as much unlearning as learning to uncover our natural well-being. Of course, that's what A Course in Miracles says, right? It's teaching you unlearning. He says, the goal of effortless mindfulness is not to escape or transcend, but to live a fully intimate human life. The immediate goal of effortless mindfulness is to transition into the new upgraded operating system, which is embodied and open-hearted and has greater capacity to be with our full human experience. One student of mine reported, "I am feeling a deep sense that all is well, that who I am is okay. It's not that there are not difficulties and pain, but now I feel a loving support within that gives me new motivation." And it's just interesting that he goes back to this, removing the blocks, right? Removing the blocks to our intimate experience of our experience, right? No longer passing it through that filter. He says, in deliberate mindfulness, we intentionally cultivate a loving attitude. calm our small thinking mind, and then observe our thoughts and feelings. That's deliberate mindfulness. He says, in effortless mindfulness, we shift out of our small thinking mind into the source of mind, which is already calm, focused, interconnected, and compassionate. The radical discovery is that the freedom, clarity, and natural love we seek are always right here. This natural awareness does not have to be created, but simply uncovered. We don't have to believe our shame-based stories and culture that we are unworthy and unlovable. Instead, the report from those who have looked within using effortless mindfulness is that basic goodness is the foundation of who we are. On the level of our essential nature, there is nowhere to go and nothing to develop. The practice of effortless mindfulness is learning how to discover, uncover, realize, or awaken to this hidden foundation of who we are. Well, that sounds exactly like what we've been learning, huh? Good news. I'm going to stop there. I think it's time for me to stop. Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah. So, does anybody have anything that they would like to share before we end our time together? Nope. Thank you, though, Dawn, for the facial expression. So I know you heard me. That's good. I love you guys. Love being with you. And we will do something similar to this next week.